Well, at an occasion in the Pibre Éileann just shortly before Christmas, the Pibre Éileann launched the CD of the music of Johnny Dorn. This music was recorded back in 1947 by Corlea Vaile de Sairn, and the Pibre Éileann and Corlea Vaile de Sairn have now come together to produce this CD, Johnny Dorn, the Master Piper. And this is volume one of the Master Pipers series from the Pibre Éileann. As I said, it was launched at an occasion in the Pibre Éileann's headquarters in Henrietta Street in Dublin shortly before Christmas, and the night was introduced by the chairman of the Pibre Éileann, Gay McKeown, whom we'll hear in just a moment. But first of all, let's have some music from Johnny Dorn.
Good evening, and you're all very welcome. On behalf of the Pibre Éileann, I'm delighted to launch this CD of Johnny Dorn's music. This was a collaboration, if you like, with the Irish Folklore Commission. The original recordings were made in 1947 by Kevin Danaher, initiated by John Kelly, the fiddle player from County Clare, who lived in Caper Street. They were originally made on disc cylinders and transferred to tape cassettes in the 60s. And there was a publication in the late 1980s, called A Bunch of Keys. And the Pibre Éileann, along with the assistance of Harry Bradshaw, have went back to the original cylinder recordings from 1947 and remastered them and put them onto CD format. The one thing that springs to mind, or the one word that springs to mind about this recording, and it's, I suppose, is a much used term in music and traditional music, is innovation. Certainly Johnny Dorn's playing is very, very creative. His expertise is absolutely wonderful. So it's a landmark recording. 10 tracks. It's a great recording, and the Pibre Éileann are delighted to issue this. So I'd like to ask Pat Mitchell to say a few words about the music. Thank you very much.
I was asked to write some notes on Johnny's music, and of course, being totally familiar with Johnny's music, you know, having heard it years ago, and we all know what it's like, and you've got these set ideas. Not only do you have these set ideas, but you've also got ideas which really have been brainwashed into you. You know, he does such and such, he does this. But it's amazing, when you sit down and actually listen closely to the music, you're overwhelmed, of course, by the variation. You know, you actually get tired after a while because it's just too much being thrown at you. But when you sit down and listen to this closely, it is absolutely fabulous music. I mean, the man was a superior musician. Now, just for the people who are used to modern recordings, I've said it in the notes. This is as close as you can possibly get to sitting down beside Johnny Dorn at the appointment that he missed. This is not like a modern recording. You're hearing Johnny's pure stream of consciousness. There was no producer there saying, stop, we'll do that again. So you've got everything. What you're hearing is he sat down and it just flowed out from him. But the man's head was full of music. You can hear that there were two things trying to happen at once. The music is just pouring out of him, and there's maybe two ornaments trying to happen at once. So you get this fumble. But doesn't really matter. It's the direct opposite of all the nicely controlled recordings you get today, of the people who say, well, I didn't like that bar, let's take it from this and we'll drop it in here. To me, that's not music. What you're listening to here is pure music. You've got the good, you've got the bad. Now, they mentioned that this was inventive. As far as I'm concerned, it is. I can't say that for certain, but if we look at, say, Johnny's brother Felix, if we look at Liam Welsh, if we look at Tommy Kearney, there's this sprightly, very strong rhythm, which, to me, has to have derived from the Cash and the Dorton style. Johnny, I think, invented the stuff for himself. He was interested in music. He wasn't interested in being a piper. For me, Irish music, Irish traditional music, is melody and variations. And you just don't get any more of it than you get in this man's music. It absolutely is fascinating. Now, we decided in the end to, as Gay said, we went back to the original recordings. This has a much fresher sound. Because technology has moved on, they were to go back to the original recordings, they were to do a good job cleaning them up. You still, of course, hear, you know, wear and tear from age and the likes. What's also been done is, on the CD, the tunes are in the sequence in which Johnny chose to sit down and record them. When you move on and you hear him playing Rakish Paddy after Colonel Fraser, after My Love's in America, and he goes into this lovely piper C, this sour note. I mean, I can feel a buzz down my back just remembering it. It's absolutely fantastic. And it brings to mind a picture. I was delving deeply into Johnny's music, and I was sitting on a bus one day, and I saw this trotting rig going down Rose Inn Street in Kilkenny. And suddenly, I was transported back to Ballinasloe, and I stopped there at the horse fair, and I watched the races in the trotting rigs. They were absolutely spectacular. I mean, there were these guys there, cigarettes flying out of the mouth, coats flying behind them, and flat out, no regard for life or limb. And when you think about it, it's that much different. When you listen to Colonel Fraser, to My Love's in America, to Rakish Paddy, it goes on for about, I think, 6 minutes, is it? When you listen to that, I think you're hearing the same totally unselfconscious, totally focused, not caring about anything. Am I doing this right? Am I doing this wrong? He's just totally focused on the music, and it connects with us. We don't have to know what notes he's playing. It connects emotionally with us and transports us to another plane, I think. That's enough to say about it. That's how I listen to it.
wonderful music it is indeed, too, from the CD of the music of Johnny Dore. Now, as Gay McKeown mentioned in his introduction there, the technical work of producing this CD was done, as so much of this great work has been done over the past number of years, by Harry Bradshaw. And I spoke to Harry recently, and I asked him to tell me a little bit, first of all, about the original recordings.
I heard of Johnny way, way back, and people talked in glowing terms of these recordings, and any of the snatches that I heard didn't quite match up to the descriptions. But back, long, long time ago, Jackie Small and myself decided that we'd do a long note documentary type program on this man Doran, because there had to be a fantastic story there about this piper who was probably the last of the travelling pipers, made his living as this nomadic character playing his pipes around the country. So over a long number of years, we set out and we identified people who knew Johnny in all different parts of the country. And when I would be doing work for the Long Note in those parts of the country, I would detour and built up a huge cache of material on Johnny. And that was the base of the program. So in 1988, Jackie and myself put together a two-part documentary on Johnny, all of these reminiscences and so on. And out of that, Jackie at that time was working in the Department of Irish Folklore, which was the follow-on to the Folklore Commission. And we got their permission to use the actual recordings to illustrate the programs. And then the idea came out, well, this would be a great time to reissue those recordings, because there always had been a great interest in Johnny's music. So shortly after the programs were broadcast in 1988, Jackie and myself did an extra job and prepared the recordings, and they were issued on cassette. And that's still available. But at the time, the Folklore Commission had preserved the recordings. They were held by the Department of Folklore, but they had copied them onto tape back in the, I suppose it would have been late 50s or early 60s, and we worked off the tape copies because the discs had deteriorated considerably in the intervening time. So for the Long Note programs and for the cassette, we worked off the tape copies. So when the suggestion came up recently that Napeabri Illan would tie in with the Department of Irish Folklore and update the cassette and bring it out as a CD, they asked me to do it, and I said fine, but we must go back to the discs because there is now technology available which wasn't available to us. It existed in the 80s but was very difficult to get access to. It's much more simple now. So everybody agreed, and September of last year I got the original, the discs out, these incredible icons, and transferred them and brought them to London and did the processing over there in preparation for the final editing. I did the processing in September of last year in the Mecca of recording studios in Abbey Road. Abbey Road have four remastering rooms, and I go over and back there regularly doing work. But I had the work completed, and I was coming back up from the restaurant, which is in the basement, and the door into the room I was working in, which by the way is next door to Studio 2, where the Beatles did all of their recordings. But on this hallowed ground, the door opened, and into the corridor flows out the music of Johnny Dore. And I thought, John McCormack has recorded here, the Beatles have recorded here, every major name in popular music in the last century visited this hallowed turf, and at last Johnny Doran joined them.
How would you describe the difference in sound between what we heard on the cassette back in 1988 and what we now hear on the new CD?
There's a huge difference, because the tape copies we worked on were limited by the tape technology of that time. I think it's best summed up in that I wasn't aware of it. In doing the transfer and the processing, it became evident when I was working on it that Kevin Danaher, the man who made these original recordings, used several microphone positions. He actually moved the mic in relation to Johnny. Now, that was undiscernible in the original tape recordings. That kind of detail just wasn't there. But with the disc cleanup, you could clearly hear a different audio perspective. So that's a good indicator of how big the difference was. And it's huge. It's almost as if a curtain has been drawn back and you can hear detail. Mind you, the energy and the freshness of the recordings is still there. That's undiminished. And the fire that's in his playing, that's all in the disc. But we just had to get away with the wear and tear of 50 years of use on these discs.
Let's go back to 1947 now, and when Kevin Danaher made the recordings. You were remarking to me earlier on that he was a remarkable man in the recordings that he did, and these probably stand as one of the greatest examples of that.
Yeah, I've done a lot of work over the years on Kevin Danaher's recordings, and he was a fantastic soundman. He was methodical in the way he did the work, and he recorded to the highest possible standard. The recordings he made from the late 40s through the 50s are superb, and they stand as a great testimony to what he did around the country under difficult circumstances, because a lot of the places they were in, rural electricity hadn't reached there. So he found himself working on battery equipment and with mains that would be far from stable and regulated. But he worked out his own brilliant little techniques of making sure that he had his discs running at the right speed and everything. But an amazing sound man, and did fantastic work. And I met him and interviewed him before he died. And he told me some of his trade secrets, but he is largely responsible for the quality of those recordings.
I suppose it's fair to say, because Johnny Dorn, unlike a lot of other musicians at that time, didn't make any commercial recordings. So without this work that Kevin Danaher did, we would have no idea what Johnny Dorn sounded like.
Yeah, that's very true. I did come across in some other research I was doing a reference to John Dorn making an appearance on 2RN, the forerunner of Radio Éireann. Now, I'm almost sure it is Johnny, but John's father was also John, so it's possible that it was his father, but it was early 34, I think, and 2RN acquired their first disc-cutting machine in 36, and at that stage, and for many years after, every broadcast was live, so there was no chance of hearing that. But apart from that, I think, I'm nearly sure that those recordings in 47 in Earlsford Terrace, that was the only occasion on which Johnny Dorn faced a microphone.
fantastic version of The Job of Journey Work, Setance there from Johnny Dorn. As we were saying, those recordings go back to 1947. Our next piece, not quite that far back, but sometime during the 1970s, I think, when Sean Maguire and Joe Burke got together in the Rustic Inn in Abbey Shrule in County Longford to record a live album. And we're going to hear a couple of hornpipes from that tonight, tomorrow morning, and The Friendly Visit. Quite a bit recently from Joe Burke from his new album, which was released just a few months ago, but that goes back a good few years now. Himself and Sean Maguire, together with piano accompaniment from Josephine Keegan, recorded in the Rustic Inn in Abbey Shrule. It was a great place for music, I remember, a good few years ago now. I'm not sure if they still have music there. I'm not sure if the Rustic Inn is still even operational, but that's music there from Sean Maguire and Joe Burke together. Two hornpipes tomorrow morning and The Friendly Visit. Silly there in Oranicht Anish, August Gokhana Marilyn, Shahabi Padro Kianavine, August in Poland. Tá á chana ige buine nacht ná Eleanor na rún.
Rábam céré chun tú a le nóir na rúan. Is ár tí mis muínú rá mín Ah.
Goes back in some versions as far as the 16th century. Eleanor na Roon there from Padder O'Canavan. Lovely, lovely singer, Padder, from Isle na Broon in Carna, but has lived here in Dublin now for many, many years.